If you are trying to access the notes, I forgot to put a link to it. It's the same thing, csc494notes/irs10.pptx, if you need to look at it. Okay, so we are going to start talking about information retrieval as it's done traditionally with a view to how it is done on the web. Okay, and then we'll slowly get to the web part soon enough. Okay, so the pledge week is over for this class, and those are the mugshots of the people. I'll take it away, don't worry. I don't want major stalking cases in this class, I'm showing this to you because I know how you look. So unless you're one of these ASU folks, you don't get to sleep in the class because I'll know who you are. The ASU folks should actually get their faces onto the rosters. So as far as the numbers are concerned, it's actually pretty much evenly divided between people who registered for 598 and people who registered for 494. Okay. So essentially, like 22 people registered per credit for 598. And 22 registered per credit for 494. Okay, that's where we are. Okay, so we are going to start talking about IR, which is basically given. Let's start talking about the normal definition of information retrieval, the traditional information retrieval. And much of what I'll be doing today is to sort of get you to understand what are the difficulties of traditional information retrieval. And in particular, we'll talk about this highly overloaded, overused word called what? What's the most overloaded and overused word in information retrieval for those of you who may know information retrieval?
Index.
Nah. Index is computer science. There's nothing overloaded about it. What? Query is what you ask.
Accuracy?
Yeah, I know, but I mean something kind of like that. No, something kind of like that. There's an actual word that people use in information retrieval. It's called relevance. And it's the most overused, most overloaded word. And we will talk about what relevance is supposed to be and why we won't actually capture it, because it's too hard to capture it. And so we'll capture something else, like the proverbial drunk searching for his keys under the lamp. We'll just compute something else and say that's relevant. Okay? So much of what I'll do today is actually to get an idea of, if we were serious about computation of relevance, what would you do about it? And then give up because it's too hard, and then do it the easy thing. Okay? And since if we understand it this way, later on we can come back and do better information retrieval. Okay, if you know what your assumptions you made. Okay, so here's the normal traditional information retrieval model. This one actually I showed you this. I don't need to show this. Okay, given a large repository of documents, how do I get the ones that I want? Okay, that's basically information retrieval. So the examples of information retrieval systems, traditional ones, are LexisNexis, medical reports, AltaVista. There are various, AltaVista is actually not really, it's more of a search engine, and it's dead anyway. There are law search engines, for example, lawyers trying to figure out the previous cases which have specific things that were decided, okay, from the mass of cases. Okay, now information retrieval essentially is keyword based, so you are assuming that the user gives a bunch of keywords about the document they are searching for, and then the system is supposed to give the documents that are kind of most relevant to that query. This is the first instance of the word relevant I'm using here. We'll talk about it more, but presumably the idea is that I tell you, if I have a information retrieval system who is a human, okay, then I might tell this human what I want. And they're supposed to understand what I want and then come and get me the specific cases or the specific documents that are going to make me happy. Okay, that's what IR is supposed to be doing. Okay. It's different from databases, the kind of query, the retrieval in databases, because the data is unstructured or possibly semi-structured at best. And the information is, you know, typically text. And finally, the requests are typically keyword-based. Okay. Now, to truly actually do the information retrieval, you know, if I am doing it in the context of, if I have a secretary and I tell the secretary, you know, this is the kind of stuff I'm looking for, and then the secretary goes off and tries to find me the documents of relevance to me, essentially I get to explain in words what I am looking for. Okay, and to really do the processing of that query, you need full natural language processing. That's what we expect. Okay. However, NLP is too hard. And so IR really can be thought of as NLP light. Okay. So trying to do a task which normally requires natural language processing, but we get away without doing it. How far can we get away without doing it? And now the interesting thing is, so IR basically assumes that somehow without understanding the entire message, you know, we will just try to look for some match of keywords or something. Okay, now the catch 22 about this is, if I know that my secretary doesn't understand English, and you know, if I'm speaking to my secretary in English, and I know that my secretary doesn't understand English and only understands a couple of words, then over a period of time, I will start speaking in broken English, because why waste my time talking in grammatically correct sentences when, you know, like for example, when I'm talking to my dog, right, I don't have a dog, but if I have a dog and I'm talking to my dog, I don't necessarily have to make grammatically correct long sonnets, right, because all the dog gets is the word. Corresponding to the dog's name, that's it. And most of the other stuff is lost. And similarly, if my secretary doesn't understand most of my, you know, requests, then I will start talking in keywords. Okay? And so in some sense, I could have explained what I'm looking for better, but since I know that anyway, it's all lost, so I'm going to start cutting things down. So the IR's catch 22 is, because you're starting with a task which requires NLP, and are trying to get by without NLP, you know, users are also smart, and after a while they say, well, I'll just show you a couple of keywords, and you know, and we'll expect that, you know, you'll do whatever you can do with it. Okay? So based on that, again, so the idea now is, you have a bunch of keywords that in some sense, in fact, in the traditional information retrieval, the query itself can be thought of as a document. Okay, you really should think of a query as a document. So you write your information need is expressed as a paragraph. Okay? Originally, if you have a secretary who understands English, you would express it as a paragraph. But then over a period of time, you start, that paragraph becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, and it might just have a couple of words left. Okay? So the original idea is to think of query as a document, and you are trying to look for documents that are most similar and most relevant to this document. Okay? As I mentioned already, I think earlier on, in the context of data retrieval, if I give you a bunch of keywords and I said, get me all the tuples get me all the files that have those keywords, it's actually a binary distinction. So whether or not a particular document has these keywords, it's either one or zero. One means it has those keywords, zero means it doesn't. And you just give all the documents which have those keywords. That's what you would do in data retrieval. That's what you would expect to be able to do normally, right? However, since the keywords really were supposed to be, since in IR, the keywords that you're seeing are really a shortened form of the query need, which is supposed to have been expressed as a document, you really are not happy enough just because the document contains all the keywords. You still want to say, what I really want is to for you to figure out what I'm looking for, okay? And, you know, how many of you have read that Woody Allen one-act play? Okay, so keep that in the back of your head. You know, this is how human interactions work, although, I mean, that's way too far to the right, I guess. But the point is, you always expect people to do what you mean, not what you say. Okay, so that's basically DRIM. And you want your search engines to do what you mean, not what you say, okay? And so essentially in data retrieval, you could have very high, I mean, you can have an idea which basically is correct in the sense it gives all the documents which contains those keywords, and yet it would not be a solution to information retrieval because people are not happy with that. They really want the documents that are relevant to them, okay? So the question then, I keep saying this word relevance. So what is relevance? As I said, it's the most overloaded term in the IR, and we're going to spend a couple of slides talking about what it should be, okay, and then how to compute it. And then we give up because it's too hard to compute it that way, and then do something else, okay? But this setup, you should come back to it anytime you are frustrated with IR and realize that, you know, I shouldn't be expecting more because this is what I should be doing. I did something else because it's easier, and, you know, that doesn't have to give me the answers I'm looking for. So what is the relevance supposed to, you know, so imagine relevance is a function, you know, presumably all I want to do is we want to rank and return documents that are relevant to the user's query. So user gave a query, and there's a corpus of documents, and you want to just rank them in terms, in the order of relevance, and show the user those. Okay? So now the question is, assume that relevance is, you know, a number. So I, for each document, I compute this number. And then, you know, 310, you just do sorting, and then show the top 10 documents which have the highest relevance. And you're done. Okay? So as far as ranking is concerned, it's extremely easy if only you can figure out, I mean, of course, there are scale issues, you know, sorting big set of documents, etc. We'll talk about that. Okay? But the first issue is, where do you get this number, relevance? Okay? And what would it depend on if you actually have an idea as to what relevance is supposed to be? So we can at least see that relevance should depend on the document itself. Okay? It should also depend on the query queue, and it should also depend on the user U. Is there anything else? Yes?
Inbound.
Why?
Because
Google does it.
No.
Please, I mean, because you said it, I want to answer it, but many of you probably think it, okay? Don't do something because it's done that way. Do it because it should be done that way, okay? Why should inbound links have any connection at all to whether or not the document is relevant? Yes, sir?
Because suppose that the document is about dogs, and I say, hey, this is a cool website about dogs, and I post a link to it, that means I've told someone that this website's about this, and I said, you should follow this link to find out information about dogs. So it's actually more valuable than looking at the site itself, because the human has annotated this with a link.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is, you know, again, first of all, for this discussion, ignore web. Try to ignore web. This is traditional IR. So assume that there are a bunch of documents that are there. Okay? Which document is relevant to the query shouldn't have to necessarily depend upon things like whether other documents are pointing to it. Okay? It seems to me it does depend upon the document, it does depend upon the query, it does depend upon the user. Yes, sir?
Would the user's history and state of mind be part of user?
But that's user.
Okay.
Yes, I agree. So user, essentially, what is user? In fact, one of the interesting things is, I said it depends on document D and the query Q and the user U. Query Q is just the keywords. For each of these, if you want to write this as a formal function, you need a representation for each of these, formal representations for each of these. And one big issue is, how do you wind up representing the document and the user? The user actually is the entire user. So when you are asking right now, that's you asking right now from this point of place. And you ask the same query tomorrow, you are not the same person. You're a different person. I mean, hopefully you are evolving, right, day to day. And so, you know, you are changing every time. So in fact, you could decide to represent user, you know, I mean, when I say user, essentially, if I have the ability, I would put you as an argument to this function. And the way normally you do this is you will find some kind of a representation for the user. For example, maybe the some sort of an attribute representation. So users are represented in terms of their height, their weight, their name, their social security number, where are they, what are their other interests, etc., etc. So that would be the user's definition. Now, as you extend that, you will be able to get more and more information about the user. Right? So, for example, whether or not a student is able to do well on a research project depends on the student, I would say. And you cannot say that's wrong. But when I say the student is represented by their GPA, there you can yell at me. Because sometimes GPA represents the student, sometimes GPA doesn't represent the student. Right? Okay? So we all have to get by with short representations for real world entities, such as, you know, students, users, etc. And whichever representation you use, it loses some information. It has to. Okay? So anyway, so we have to talk about the user, the query, the document. Is there anything else? And as I said, the time at which it was asked, I would think of it in terms of the user. Okay? Or you can call it query context, which is, for example, gives the time, the place at which the query is asked. But I find it easier to assume that me asking the query while I'm sitting in Tempe is different from me asking the query while sitting, you know, I'm a different user when I'm here from somebody else. Yes? Similarity to the other documents. What is that supposed to mean? Did anybody get that idea? So what we are saying is that to get an idea of it is always do ego search. And ego search in this class means searching for me, not for you. But anyway, so you do a search for Kama Party, which is obviously the most important query. And the interesting point is, where are all these bozos coming from? Obviously, I'm the most important Kama Party, right? I mean, according to this. And so there are enough links to me, and they should have just put those in the top 10, right? I mean, you know, why waste time with other people? The point, of course, is you need diversity of results. Because, in fact, if one particular link is extremely good, according to you, then why not give 10 copies of that? Why? Because the second time you see it, its relevance is being judged in the context of the results that you have already seen. And so if you see the same thing the second time, its marginal or residual relevance becomes much smaller. Okay? This is a very, very, very important point. Not enough people talk about this, but in this class, actually, we'll discuss this. There's research papers talking about how to take this quote-unquote result diversity into account. But really, so here what most search engines will wind up doing is they will diversify the search results. Okay, so rather than put all their eggs in one basket, which is the real Kama Party, they decided, you know, who knows, you know, first of all, in fact, in their point of view, it could be this guy searching for whether or not the web, you know, realizes that this person exists. In which case, if they are not at all in the top 10, they will start using Bing, which is one less guy, right? One less guy using my search engine. Okay? So in fact, one way you increase the chance that people will find something of relevance is essentially to diversify the search results. Okay? But the reason diversity comes up is because essentially the true relevance does depend on the other documents that have already been shown to the user. Okay? So now I have a nice notation for the relevance. All I need is this number. Okay, this is a number which takes R, which takes document D, query Q, user U, and the set of documents K that have, you know, D1 to DK that have been shown until now. And I'll give a number. And once that number is there, anybody from 310 can do ranking. Right? That's it. Yes. That have already been shown to the user.
So you mean in the previous?
Did somebody just cross us? I don't know, somebody came in, somebody left, but I thought maybe the same person just walked by. Is that true? Oh my God, okay. So we become like an interstate now. But anyway. Yes, what's the question?
So this set is dependent upon the previous set of results that were returned.
No, I'm not, all I'm saying is, So I'm showing a ranked list of results. Okay, in computing the correct ranking, originally we assumed that you could get the relevance number for each of the documents and then show the most relevant document first, second most relevant document next, and so on. That would have, for example, said that Rav's main page has relevance 10 out of 10, okay, and Rav's papers page has relevance 9 out of 10, and Rav's 494 course page has relevance 8 out of 10. That is if you're only showing that one page. But if I've already told you I've shown Rav's main page, then showing Rav's papers page now doesn't have relevance 9 out of 10. It has relevance probably 3 out of 10. Because I've shown you something from which, you know, basically I have shown you the relevant part of Rav's page already, and so you may want to see something else.
So you also care about the relevance that had?
Which one?
The other document?
Yes, yes. Because that is taken into account, right? This is basically, he's saying, if I have shown these documents, now in the worst case, if all of these are irrelevant and they have nothing to do with D, then basically they wouldn't have affected the relevance of D. But to the extent these guys are similar to this document and they have, you know, previously high or low relevance, then these guys' relevance would be affected. Okay? So then, you know, in this little notation allows you pretty much everything you want. The question, of course, is how do you get these numbers? That's what we'll be spending time on. Yes? No, let's assume for now just one query. In fact, what's interesting is you can extend this and say it's dependent on a sequence of queries too. I'm only talking about a single query. And these documents D1 to DK have already been shown as an answer to query Q. I've decided to show them. So then if I am going to add another document D, how much extra relevance would I be getting? What's the marginal additional relevance? You know, marginal relevance is always being talked about, right? People say that the first car is a big deal. The second car is not such a big deal. The 15th car is a headache, right? Where are you going to put all these cars? Okay? So the marginal utility of cars keeps falling as the number of cars increase. Okay? And similarly, marginal relevance of documents could change if, in fact, very similar such documents have been shown. How many of you, I mean, this is way off the, I mean, if you guys don't even know most of the shows I see in US, I don't know whether you would have read P.G. Wodehouse. Anybody has read P.G. Wodehouse? Okay. So there's actually a beautiful story by P.G. Wodehouse where this guy is trying to get somebody into trouble. And the way he manages it is this guy is going to perform in some sort of an amateur night. By singing a particular song, and Jeeves, who is P.G. Wodehouse's main character, makes sure that the seven people before him have sung the same song. So when this guy comes and starts singing the song, even though he thinks he's making a great impression, people start throwing tomatoes at him because they've had it with that song. You know, it was a good song, there was nothing wrong with it, but if the seven people before you have sung the same exact song, why are you singing it again? Okay, and there's nothing wrong with the song. What's wrong was it's been sung already that day seven times. Okay, and you can essentially, you have to realize that if you have shown something useful, don't show copies of that or don't show things that are extremely close to it again and again. Okay, so now my, yes sir. I don't know. I mean, that's actually a different issue. In fact, I think whether or not, I mean, what we are saying right now, I mean, to the extent if you believe that relevance of a document depends also on how big the corpus is, then you have to take that into account. I don't believe that. By the way, this part of, you know, one thing that you could do on the blog is we can have an argument as to whether there should be more things in this. In the class itself, I won't do much more than this because I won't even actually compute this because it's too hard to compute this. Okay, I'll tell you in the next slide as to why it's too hard to compute it, and we'll find some easy ways of getting by. But, you know, you can talk about ideally what else should the relevance contain. Okay. So how do we get? So we have this, and if we get this number, we can rank results and we are happy. The question is, how do we get this? Okay? What's hard about getting it? Well, one idea is specify the relevance upfront. So you write a program where we'll basically, there's a little database which tells you for each document D and query Q and user U and the sequence of results that have already been shown for that result, what is the number? So you just specify a huge, big n-dimensional matrix. The problem is it's way too hard. Okay, where are you going to get these numbers? How are you going to write them? You need one number for each query, user, and shown results combination. There are a gazillion billion queries, there are a gazillion billion users, and there are also a gazillion billion combinations of documents that have already been shown. And you have to multiply all of them. So you'll get a really big gazillion billion for which you need numbers. Okay, how are you going to specify this? Okay, so this is sort of like saying, if only I have this relevance function, I can answer any question, is like Archimedes saying, just give me a large enough lever and a fulcrum and I can lift the universe. It's so damn easy. Okay, the problem is, how are you going to get a large enough lever and where are you going to put the fulcrum in the universe? Okay, so this is a dead on arrival idea. You can't specify it upfront. You learn it. Okay? Slowly try to learn these numbers somehow. Now, whenever you do learning, I mean, again, you know, I don't know how many of you have had some background in machine learning. We'll do some in this class too. But in general, when we are trying to learn, we will have a bias about what form a function takes, and we may have seen examples of the values of this function because the user has shown that certain documents were relevant to certain queries in the past. And based on these examples, you are actually trying to learn the function, which, you know, with respect to the bias you have, with respect to the kind of, the class of relevance functions you think you are trying to fit to the data, you'll find that particular function that's closest to the data. That's something you can do. Okay, now in learning, you can do active learning. So you elicit utility. You know, say, do you like this? Can you tell me, did you like this? Did you like this? Or you can do passive learning. Just see what the user does. You show some results and see which ones the user seems to click, which ones the user seems to spend more time on, and then decide that means the user found them to be relevant. Okay? And from that, then you will get labeled data, and then you can learn the utility functions from that. Okay, now a huge problem. This is a good way to do things, but a huge problem is you need to be hanging around with the user. You need to be essentially trying to learn this relevance function for each user separately. That's not surprising because that's what has been written already there. So what do you think is the main reason Gmail has been invented? Okay, no. So more importantly, I think the philosophical reason, I think, and of course nobody will say this to you, you could say Gmail was invented so that Google also can try to support mails for people. Okay, but really one way of thinking about Gmail is the following. If you have to stalk a user to see what they're doing, then you need to be logged in. Okay, I never want to be logged in. I'm searching for all sorts of sensitive stuff. I don't want to be logged in. So before I started using Gmail, I would never be logged in. So they will say, can we kind of look over your shoulder? You say, no way. Whereas if I am logged in Gmail, they have a hold on me. So anywhere in that browser I wind up searching, they have a way of keeping track of my search history. Now, of course, you could say that's because they want to be a big brother, but more importantly, if they need to learn something about me, if they need to realize that I am the same person who found this result relevant for this query yesterday, and so you are likely to find a similar result being relevant today, to do that, they have to firstly see that I am the same user. Okay? You can learn with respect to session IDs, but those are too short. You really expect secretaries to learn about their bosses because they hang around for a long enough time. If you keep firing your secretaries every 2 days, you don't expect them to learn anything about your working habits. Okay, so in some sense, to make this possible, you need to get people to stick around without thinking they're doing Google any favor. And you know, Gmail is one such case. Okay, and even if in fact, I mean, there are no other uses, this in itself more than makes up for the fact, because they can improve the relevance of the results they can show you, and of course they can show you advertisements too. That's a different story. Okay, so this is what we would like to do, but that's hard too. Okay, make up the user's mind. Okay, if you're thinking about, if people ask for something and you basically have no idea what you don't, they don't quite know what they're looking for, and they give some keywords and you have things to sell, you say, you creatively interpret the user's query such that it corresponds to something that you're trying to actually sell. Okay, so any of you who have tried to buy a used car, right, you can go and say, oh, I'm looking for a kind of a cheap car, and which is kind of, you know, good and all that fun stuff. And you might even say, oh, I'm looking for a Honda or something, and this guy says, no, Hondas are no good, but this other car just like Honda and $10,000 cheaper, and you really, really like it, and they, at the end of the time, maybe you will buy it. Okay, so you can actually make up the user's mind. You know, oftentimes, you know, this may or may not happen on the search engines, but this is something that you can see as a potential approach for information retrieval, because you're giving small number of queries, a small number of keywords, and the user themselves don't quite know what exactly they're looking for sometimes. So you can try to convince them that this is what you really want. Okay? A combination of the above, which is essentially learn and do this. This is more effective. Okay, so if you just, as soon as you go into the used car salesperson lot and you say something, if before you even complete your first sentence, if they start trying to sell this, you know, nice and shiny red car to you, you start distrusting them. They think they have this desperately, they're trying to sell this car, that's why they're trying to push this. If for a while they have this conversation, try to understand what you're saying, and you know, almost like seamlessly try to get you to the red car that they wanted to sell, you might fall for it. Okay, so really you need learning combined with, partial learning combined with push what you want to sell. Okay, by the way, I said search engines don't necessarily do it, but actually they do. Not nowadays, but the main idea for Google Ads came from search engines, which essentially said, we will put at the top of the list the result who paid me the most amount of money. And we will be transparent about it, because we are just transparently saying that whoever has paid us the maximum money will come to the top of the list. Okay? Overture is a company which did this, for example. Okay? And then Google Ads, essentially, all they did is they separated the ads onto their separate columns, where, you know, the links that they're showing there is corresponding to the people who paid them the maximum amount of money. And on this side, supposedly, no connection to what has been paid, right? Okay, so this is done even on the web scenarios. You do try to sell what you want to sell. Okay, an off-the-wall analogy for this, apart from the used car salespeople, is something that some of you in this class will understand, which is the way saris are sold in India. Saris are this clothes that, you know, women wear. It's a sort of a wraparound thing. And, you know, unlike U.S. department stores where you go and look around and throw stuff around, in the sari shop, there's a guy, like a used salesperson, who's actually trying to sell you stuff. Okay? And then, you know, a typical sari shop looks like that. You know, everything is on pretty much all over the place, and then when nobody is there, they'll put them back on shelves. And then people start saying, you know, they have no clue. When people go to clothes store, do they know what they're trying to buy? Do you guys know what you're going to buy? Men probably do, because they want to buy another pair of jeans. Women, I don't know. Okay, so essentially they'll start having this conversation, oh, I look like this, and then I like this, and people are pulling stuff all over the place. And then there's a very interesting combination of learning the user's preferences as well as pushing the costliest sari to the user. That happens. Okay? And so that's more or less what you have to do, because again, people don't completely explain what it is that they're trying to buy. Not necessarily because They don't think you will understand because sometimes they don't quite themselves know what they're looking for. And this is true in document search too. Okay, you might have some idea about what you're looking for, and you would take help from people. And this is in fact a classic example that I mentioned last class. People started using the top hit because they thought Google thinks that's important, so it must be important for us. Not because they thought it was important for their query. Okay? So really, all of these are relevant ideas. I think this is kind of a nicer one that people will believe in, you know, in a computer science point of view. So which one do you think we will use for IR? None of these. Because too many, too hard. What we do instead is just go ahead and assume a relevance model. Okay? There's no actual reason as to why the relevance model I assumed is correct. So I'll just assume that the function is a particular character. I mean, so if you said R of D given Q U D1 to DK is sine of D1 divided by square root of cosine of Q plus D2 square, let's say. That would be a function. Why did I make this up? Looks nice and mathematical. May have no connection to the reality. But the advantage it does have is it's a nice little function. I can compute it. Thankfully, this is not the function we'll use, but the one that we use is not much different from it. Okay? And when you see what we'll wind up doing in the next slide, you have to keep in mind, really, that we are doing that because it's easy to do. And it may be having some connection to what people will want, but really there is no obvious reason as to why the relevance function should be computed that way. It should be computed one of these ways, really.
So
yes?
Before we go to the relevance, why is it not also equally important to consider comprehensiveness of the result? Like, for example, like a Wikipedia entry of Kamam Party might be more relevant than just your more. You say both are relevant, but that might be more comprehensive.
I think those things, again, as I said, that's possibly, I was going with the traditional IR model where people will be shown documents and they say, yes, it's relevant, no, it's not relevant.
Okay.
And you are talking about, did you give all pieces of information? So there is a database view of a query where show me all the cars below $2,000 in price. And a database manager is considered a loser if it doesn't show every one of the cars which is less than 2,000. If it only shows two cars, that's not considered good enough. Okay? But in IR, we will talk about precision and recall, which does capture that in a minute. Okay? So what we will wind up doing is this relevance function, really what you probably want to do is this, and that's still too hard. Okay? Instead, what we wind up doing is sort of start from, bootstrap yourself from a reasonable model. One size fits all. All users will be happy with this relevance model. And then try to make slight changes for individual users if they are logged on long enough time on the Gmail. That's what we'll wind up doing. Okay? So that's what traditional IR winds up doing. So we want really a ranking algorithm that captures the user's relevance metric. Only the user's relevance metric is not fully captured by the short keyword query. Worse, when the query has 10 words limit, as used to be the case in many search engines. Now it's no longer the case, but for a long time, search engines would actually have a keyword limit too in terms of what you can enter. So we hypothesize that what might be underlying the user's relevance judgment is similarity of words, similarity of citation, popularity of documents, etc., etc. So we suppose this, so this is a bias we have. We assume that the relevance function is kind of independent of the user, really, and it's only dependent upon document similarity at the level of words. It's not dependent on the meaning because we don't know how to compute meaning. Okay? And we also think things like co-citation. And also the number of pages pointing to it. These might be connected to relevance. Okay? And if that is the case, and then go ahead and hope that hypothesis is good. Now, people aren't paying anything for this stuff. So all you need to do is the way you you realize this hypothesis is slightly better than your competitor. And then you corner the market. Okay? Because essentially you just need to be slightly better than your competitor and, you know, and you'll corner the market. So that's more or less what IR winds up doing. And so the reason things like similarity of co-citation, similarity of words, etc., wind up becoming important is because that's what we know how to compute. Not because there is any theorem saying they are connected to relevance. Yes. No, what I'm saying is you start with this and then add that to some extent. Okay? Okay. So, again, as I said, what we really want is relevance of a document D with respect to user U given a query Q, plus, in fact, marginal residual relevance of a document D dash to the user U given the query Q and the fact that you've already shown some number of documents. That's what you really want. And what you will be able to compute is similarity between documents. And as far as this is concerned, you can view this in terms of, you know, if you are talking about the similarity between the document and the query, to be defined. Okay. So if you think of query itself as a mini document, and if you talk about a similarity function between query and document D, okay, then you can also talk about these. The D should be close to Q while being maximally distant from D1 to DK. The same similarity function can be used to also say you are maximally distant from the results that have been shown while you are closest to the document that the user is looking for. Okay? So that becomes a nice problem that we actually have a hope of solving without any learning. Okay? And traditional IR doesn't do any learning. And on top of it, you can actually improve the relevance function by learning the user behavior. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So this, in fact, I will not do the marginal relevance right now. But suffice it to say that we will get back to this as to how search engines, for example, try to ensure trying to ensure that the document D is maximally distant from these documents is not easy computationally. And so another way you could do this is to assume that you do a cluster analysis. You go ahead and, you know, original set of documents might have been clustered into sets of topics. And then you wind up giving one result from each cluster. If you do that, you hopefully will ensure that the result that you are giving, the new result you are giving, these would have been representatives of the k previous clusters. And this one is from the k plus 1th cluster. So hopefully it will be far enough from the original result that you've been shown. So cluster analysis gets connected to result diversity that way. Okay? Okay. So the take home message for this part of the lecture is really ultimately relevance computation is a learning problem, but you bootstrap it with a specific metric for computing relevance, okay, which is just based on the document similarity, okay, and maybe co-citation and link structure. And really, all of these are only approximations to what a specific user might be looking for, okay, but you really don't have the computational resources to look at every separate user separately, so you have one size fits all, more or less. Okay, and as somebody pointed out, of course, the current reality in the search engines is it does start. I mean, 80% of what they do is still this. Plus, increasingly, they can actually follow you, and you know, if you are logged in, you can get at least some results that are probably more closer to what you are interested in. You know, and again, that too could be done essentially. If you are making results connected to a user, one of the interesting things, we'll get to it again later, is you can't represent a user as a human being directly in the function. Instead, you have some sort of an attribute-oriented representation. One attribute-oriented representation could be sort of the keywords that define the user. Okay? Here are, you know, so you show a person and say, tell me 20 words that come to your mind when you see this person. Okay, not a random person, but hopefully somebody you know. And if I can give you 20 words that sort of come to my mind when I see a friend of mine, I would argue that these 20 words can be added to any query they ask. Okay? And that can basically make the similarity not just between the keywords on the document, but similarity between the keywords and the user representation together and the document. That in itself already makes things manageable. Okay. So if we did, there is this question of how to get the relevance function. The next question, of course, is if I start using some kind of a relevance function and I learned, I used one information retrieval system and I have another retrieval system which is using a slightly different method, how do I compare them? Yes.
According to similarity measures, if we have a query with one keyword, the most relevant document of the results would be the document which contains the more times the keyword.
We will talk about those details. I mean, the question is the multiple ways of interpreting them. Okay. All I can say is what we are doing is we are trying to, we know what the true relevance function should have, and we don't know how to compute it. And if we are going by similarity, word similarity, etc., then what would be the reasonable thing to do? Okay. Given two different ideas for approximating the truth, I can tell you which is slightly better. But both approximations can be wildly off, essentially. And that's something that you take for granted as you start, because you really are not computing any notion of true relevance. Okay? So the way you would measure the performance is essentially, as I mentioned earlier, using precision and recall. Okay? The ideas are that suppose total universe of documents, and this red circle shows the documents. Again, this is sort of assuming binary relevance. The precision recall, this particular picture assumes binary relevance. That means a document is either relevant or not relevant. Okay, in this picture we are not thinking of degrees of relevance, but you can generalize it. Okay, so this one is the set of relevant documents. Okay, and this green one is the set of documents that the system actually returned. Okay, now notice that the user, basically, if the user went painstakingly through the entire corpus, and again, this is traditional IR where you assume that is possible, okay, then the user would have said, these are really the ones I like for my query that I'm looking for. And when they gave an arbitrary representation of that query, the system came up with this. Okay, of these, this one is true positive. These are the ones that the system said are relevant to the user, and the user agrees that they are relevant. Okay, and these are false positives, because these the system says are relevant to the user, but the user can take a look at them and say they are not relevant. These are false negatives because the system didn't give them. But if the system gave it, the user would have felt happy because they are actually relevant to them. Okay, and in the best of all cases, what do you do? You have green circle and red circle being identical. If the green circle and red circle are identical, then the precision and recall don't have to be talked about, because its precision is 100%, recall is 100%. But in any normal scenario, the green circle will be different from the red circle. So then you can talk about two different ideas, which is the fraction of the results that are returned that are actually relevant to the user. That's called precision, okay, which is the true positives divided by true positives plus false positives. It only depends on the green circle. Okay? The recall, on the other hand, is the fraction of the relevant results that the system was able to actually unearth, which is basically true positives divided by true positives plus false negatives. Because this and this together are the truly relevant documents, but the system only gave these, so it missed some of the relevant documents. Okay? So this is precision and recall, and you keep talking about it all your life in IR. And as I said, for databases, what's precision and recall? It's 100% because you assume that a database is not a database unless it goes gives only the results and nothing more, nothing other than the results. Okay. So in fact, in swearing in witnesses in the court, they make them say what? You know, apart from the Bible stuff, etc. They say, "I shall tell whole truth and nothing but the truth." Okay. So which part is precision? Which part is recall? Whole truth is recall. Nothing but truth is precision. Okay? And you need to say both, because you can do white lies whereby you don't tell some of the true stuff. Then the recall would be affected. Or you can tell direct lies where you make up stuff which is not true, in which case the precision would be affected. Okay? So real world does care about precision as well as recall. 100% precision or 1.0 precision means soundness, that means nothing but the truth, and 1.0 recall means completeness, means whole truth. Okay, so now the question I have is, as and you already know, why don't we use precision recall measures for databases? Because databases are supposed to give all truth and nothing but the truth. Okay, there is one other thing that I forgot. Okay, so the question is this. If a search engine were to return results, okay, what are the users actually able to sense? The precision or the recall? Okay, precision, like soundness, is a local property. So if you can't even tell after being shown the result whether it's relevant to you or not, you had no idea what you're looking for to begin with. Okay? It's possible, but you know, most of the time you can tell whether what you saw is relevant or not. Okay? Recall, on the other hand, is what? Is something that the user would not know, because this depends on knowing the entire universe of documents. Okay, so here is a class of, so this is actually, there's a very interesting argument that I once read about conferences, you know, technical conferences where you submit papers and the reviewers will select some of the papers to be presented. Okay, and then they're hoping that those are the good papers worth being presented. And then when you actually go to the conference, you hear the papers that are presented there. And you can hear the paper and decide what. Whether or not that paper is a good enough paper, whether the guy giving the talk is actually able to stand up without falling asleep, whether what they're saying has any merit. So you can tell precision by listening to the talks. What you can't tell is recall. Okay? So a classic case is the PageRank paper by Google authors was submitted to SIGIR, which is the very best conference in information retrieval, and they were told to go suck an egg. Because it's not good enough paper. We won't publish it. And what is interesting is the number of citations to that one paper is more than the total number of citations to all the SIGIR papers combined. Okay? But would the people who went to SIGIR 1998 conference have realized that they are missing an important paper? No. They can only tell, oh, this is a good paper, that guy's paper shouldn't really have been accepted. Precision, you can judge. Recall, you can't. So in fact, that conference, that the author of that article in SIGIR, I'll send it to you, was arguing that any selection strategy should be aware of this and not sacrifice recall, because you don't really know what is relevant and what's not relevant, you know, especially in technical work, okay, because what would stand the test of the time is not obvious, okay. But it's an interesting thing to keep in mind, because even in search engines, the things that are that can be judged directly is the precision. And a search engine which has low precision, everybody knows, is a useless search engine. A search engine which has low recall is harder to judge. Because if you knew what the answer was, there were some cases where you know, oh, I know I have seen this particular page which has the following keywords. Let me try to look for that page. And I type that in Bing, I type that in Google. Google doesn't give it to me, Bing gives it to me. That's a classic case of Google having low recall, Bing having high recall. Then I might say, okay, I should go to Bing more often. Okay, but most of the time, when you don't know what the answers are supposed to be for your query, you just can only look at the answers and tell whether they are relevant to you, but you won't know what was actually, what relevant results are being missed. Yes, there was a question somewhere. Okay. Now, the interesting thing is that as you, the thing that basically people talk about is how the precision varies as recall increases. So because in some sense, a search engine, RA, information retrieval system, doesn't just have to give 10 results and stop. It can say, I'm ranking the entire database, in the order of their relevance to you. And I'll start giving them, first 10 at a time. 10 times, you know, first 10, then another 10, then another 10, another 10. And if you keep clicking, they'll keep giving you. Okay? In that case, then how do you differentiate between Bing and Google? The difference then would have to be based on how fast are the precise, the relevant documents being shown. How long do I have to wait before I have seen all the relevant documents? If one search engine shows all, in fact, one way of ensuring 100% recall, and I mentioned it last class, is to return the entire corpus. Right? If you return the entire corpus, you clearly got 100% recall. And one way of getting high precision is to not return anything at all. Because if you don't open your mouth, you can't be wrong. Okay? The question is, you know, if you keep talking, are you saying more useful things up front versus much later? So if there are two teachers, one of who says the more useful things in the first 15 minutes of the class and then blathers on, and the other teacher who might get to the useful things, such as what would come on the exam, only at the very end of the class, you know, you can decide which one is more precise. And how is the precision changing with respect to recall? Okay, so that's what we normally look at, given the recall on the x-axis, you know, 1%, 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, there's 100% recall, and at each recall point, what was the level of precision up to that point? And the best ideal search engines will have 100% precision at every level of recall. Okay, and so in fact, after they show the last relevant document, they stop talking. They don't just keep showing the entire, you know, corpus. They only show the truly relevant document and in the order of their relevance, and they stop. Okay, but you don't expect that miracle all the time. So normally, you will have, the, you know, two different search engines or two different information retrieval systems might have two different curves, one which like this, one which may be like that, for example. At that point, then it's up to you to decide which one you like. Do you like higher recall and you're willing to sacrifice immediate precision to get the higher recall, or do you want, you know, high precision upfront? And it depends. Obviously, on the web, what do you think is more important? How many people have actually clicked in the last 1 month the next 10 results? Next 10 results link. Okay. The rest of you didn't even do that. Right? Which basically means recall, who cares? Mostly it's precision. Okay, so on the web, especially for the normal kinds of queries and the normal user population, optimizing for precision gives you better bang for the buck, you the search engine. Okay, if Donald Rumsfeld is looking for all the terrorists from your database, he would be unhappy if you just gave a few and not all of them. But Donald Rumsfeld, I don't even know whether he uses search engines, and he's just one guy. And there's a huge number of other people who only look at the first 10 results. And so just the economics of it would be optimized for precision, which is what your search engines look like. Again, going back to traditional IR ideas, here is a recall curve. You should understand this because it's on the homework, it's not a particularly rocket science kind of a thing, but it's worth understanding what's going on. So again, as I said, suppose a search engine returned the following document with respect to some query. Okay? So all the things in blue are relevant. Okay? And all the other things are irrelevant. So if I have this, then I can compute the precision recall curve of this search engine by essentially putting, this is called the 11-point curve, where you put this is a 0.1 precision, 0.2 precision, 0.3 precision, up to 1.0, I'm sorry, 0.1 recall, 0.2 recall, etc., up to 1.0 recall. Okay, and then here is the precision. So at the point, for example, at 0.2 recall, 0.2 recall happens. So notice the total, these are the only, the blue ones, I'm sorry, the there are, for a given query, there are exactly 10 documents that are relevant. We know that what the TP plus FP, the true positives plus false positives together is equal to 10. Okay, so only 10 documents are relevant. And by the time you showed the third document, you have shown 2 of the 10 relevant documents. Okay, 2 of the 10 relevant documents, and so that's the 0.2 recall. And by that time, the user has seen those 3 documents. So they have seen 2 relevant documents and 1 irrelevant document. So up to that point, the precision that the user felt was 2/3. Right? So at the 0.2 recall, the precision was 2/3. And at 0.3 recall, similarly, the precision was 0.5. Okay? Normally, you expect the precision recall curve to fall as the recall increases. You expect. Okay, it's not necessary. Sometimes there can be hiccups in the way the search engine is working, and you know, first 3 results were irrelevant, let's say. And then you kept talking only relevant results. So you would have low precision up to, let's say, you know, 0.2 recall, and then your precision increases. That's possible. But generally, you would assume that such a search engines would be very heavily penalized by the users because they didn't show the good results in the very top 3. Okay, and so generally you assume that the search engines that are hanging around, our information retrieval systems that are hanging around, will have this kind of a precision false as the recall goes on. Okay, and the question then is how fast is the precision falling as the recall increases? As I keep talking, how soon am I losing you? Okay, how soon are you getting bored with anything I'm saying? That's the difference. Okay. And so here are, you know, this is an obvious thing. Here are 3 precision recall curves for 3 different methods, okay? And the question is, what can we say about them? Assuming that, you know, computational costs are awash, that means they're basically all methods more or less work with the same amount of efficiency, okay? Method 1, method 2, method 3, first of all, you should be able to see that method 3 is a loser. There is no reason why you should be interested in method 3. There is no recall point where method 3 has a higher precision than anybody else. So method 3 is dead. Okay? As far as methods 1 and 2 are concerned, the story is interesting. Up until about this, about 50% recall, the orange method has higher precision. Right? And then after that, the orange method has lower precision. And the blue method has higher precision. Okay? So if you are into medium to low recall situations where I just want a first few results, okay, then clearly precision becomes the most important thing. And so you would mostly go with the orange thing. If on the other hand, you do need to get all the relevant results, then I would, there's an argument to be made that the blue one is actually better. Okay? Okay. Now, of course, each search engine really should be, information retrieval really, method should really be evaluated in terms of precision recall curves. Okay, so and in fact, as and when you read some papers and people trying to say, oh, we are actually improving the current search engines, current IR systems, they'll always draw graphs of this kind, precision recall curves. And in fact, more likely than not, they might look like this. That basically means this is a search engine which gives only 50% recall. After that, it has no recall. It only gives 50% of the results. But up to that 50%, it has 100% precision. So you only speak when you know for sure you are right, and then you keep your mouth shut. And this search engine, on the other hand, gives reasonably high precision. Maybe let's make it slightly more reasonable. So this guy is competitive with this guy, but below, for up to 50% recall, but then it does gracefully degrade as the amount of recall is increased. Okay? And you can find these kinds of things in many ideas. You know, when you actually evaluate an idea as an improvement to a search engine information retrieval, you might get something like this. And then if I'm trying to argue that, look, for example, so my favorite example is, suppose I'm trying to search over a database of used cars, okay? And I said, give me all cars manufactured by Honda which are less than $2,000 in cost, okay? Now, in the database, it turns out that people entered a lot of this data, and some of the people may have realized everybody and their brother knows that Accords are manufactured by Honda. So for those cars, for some Accords, the manufacturer field is not filled. So it's empty. For those of you from database background, that's a null value. A tuple with a null value, a missing value. Okay. But the user is searching over the manufacturer field. So you have two options. Option one is to say, if you don't have a manufacturer field, you don't even get to participate in the game. So all the Accords all the Accord tuples which don't have manufacturer Honda written on them will never be retrieved. That's option one. And if you do that, you would be doing the traditional database idea where you will get some of the cars, and every car you do bring out will be a car manufactured by Honda, and it will be less than $2,000. Okay? A different person might say, well, when there are null values, let me try to predict what those null values are. Based on the rest of the data, let me try to predict what is the missing value is. That's not too hard. In fact, you can just look at any database and see, looks like cars are manufactured by a single manufacturer, and so if 15 Accords have been manufactured by Honda, then the 16th one is also manufactured by Honda. So there's a very high probability that Honda is the missing value. Okay, but it's only a probability. I can't be completely certain. Okay, it could have been a Honda, which has been said to be Honda, but you made it in your backyard. Okay, and the point, of course, then is you will be giving those results too. And if you give those results, then their precision is probabilistically reducing, but the recall is increasing because you are able to give more results that are of relevance to the user. Okay, so precision recall curves will stay with you for a long, long time to come. In fact, what I just talked to you about is a kind of a database scenario, but really there's no difference between the databases and information retrieval, because I said a traditional database would have just completely ignored any tuple with null values. And I'm saying, really, is that a reasonable thing to do if, in fact, this database is populated by bozos and they may have missed a bunch of values? You just penalize yourself because of the stupidity of the people who entered the data. It makes no sense. Okay? So, in fact, databases and IR become extremely close once you allow databases to be put on the web and the data be entered by outsiders. Okay. One last thing, I guess, is for today is, if I don't like curves, okay, I just want a number, single number. Give me, what's the single number for this guy? What's the single number for this guy? I don't want to get into this business of how the precision varies with respect to recall. So then, even in any particular place, for each precision, there is a recall, each recall, there's a precision. So the question is, suppose I essentially did not want to look at how the behavior varies over the entire corpus, but rather I'll only look at 50 results from both of the search engines. and compute the precision and recall with respect to those first 50 results. So then I have two search engines which have two different numbers. Now precision 1, recall 1. Precision 2, recall 2. How do I compare them? It's clear that if precision 1 is greater than precision 2 and recall 1 is greater than recall 2, then precision 1, P1R1 wins. But otherwise, you don't know. So one idea is to look at some kind of an average between these two numbers, precision and recall. Which average would work better? You at least know three different averages. You know, if you look back to your old math days, arithmetic mean, geometric mean, and harmonic mean. And in case you have forgotten, harmonic mean is what you would use if you are trying to compute the average speed if first on the way to Tucson you drove 40 miles per hour and on the way back from Tucson you drove 60 miles per hour and you're trying to compute the average speed. Okay, that would be a harmonic mean. Okay, and what is a harmonic mean? It is basically half of the reciprocals of the two inverse. Okay, so in fact it's called the F measure. If when applied, the harmonic mean of precision and recall is called the F measure. Okay, that's just, that would be half of 1 by P plus 1 by R is equal to 1 by F, which means F is equal to 2PR by P plus R. And the advantage of this, I mean, you know, you can, once you choose something, you can make some advantages for this. One advantage of picking harmonic rather than arithmetic mean is harmonic mean punishes search engines which have 0 of one and 1 of the other. And this is very important because in IR, it's so damn easy to get 100% precision, 0 recall, and 0% precision and 100 recall. Those two extremes are extremely easy to get. As you can see, our ideas close to that. So you really want search engines whose precision and recall are closer. And harmonic mean basically would say a search engine which has 0.5 precision and 0.5 recall is slightly better than a search engine which is 0 precision and 1 recall. Whereas the arithmetic mean will say they're both equal. Right? So F measure is something that we use, and then there are variations of F measure where you might, for example, weight the precision and recall. You might say, I like precision more than the recall. So you would say beta times the precision plus gamma times the recall, and then you would then compute the harmonic mean of that weighted precision and recall measure. Okay, so we will stop here, and I already mentioned this part that on the web, precision matters more than recall. If you have to give up one, you are likely to probably give up recall than precision. And then when we come back on Thursday, we'll talk about evaluating the way the search engines are actually evaluated, information retrieval systems are evaluated in the IR conferences. There is a competition called TREK competition. We'll talk about that. And then we'll slowly make our way into actually computing the retrieval functions using similarities.